the worst shedding of Jewish blood in American history. What do we make of it?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, by now you've certainly heard about it. You've heard about the terrible massacre, the worst shedding of blood in American history for the Jewish people. America, with all of its flaws, has been a safe place for the Jewish people, one of the safest places in history for the Jewish people. So it makes an event like this all the more shocking, all the more painful, all the more traumatic for American Jews in particular. I've got a lot of thoughts to share with you today. As always, we want to open up the phones, 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. If you have a comment, if you have a question, by all means, give me a call. I may sound slightly different. If you're watching, you see we don't have a live video feed. We are on the road in West Lafayette, Indiana. We're not able to get our video feed working, and we're not in our normal studio, but you'll hear me loud and clear, and above all, you'll hear my heart loudly and clearly. When I saw the news Saturday morning about the massacre, reports of the shooting, and very quickly reports of numerous dead, ultimately 11 dead, the shooter wounded in custody, four officers, police officers, SWAT team injured in the process. The man runs into the synagogue shouting, "All Jews must die." He is a Jew-hating radical right individual, from what we understand. He also believes that the president is controlled by Jews and America can never be great as long as the president is controlled by Jews, as he is. In other words, he is not a Trump supporter. Ugly on every front, ugly on every possible account. Shouting, "All Jews must die," he begins to shoot with his AR-15. The oldest victim, 97 years old. Two brothers killed, husband and wife killed. And it was not just a synagogue Shabbat service, Saturday morning service, but multiple floors in the building, different things taking place. There was also a bris, in Hebrew, brit milah. Bris is the colloquial way of saying brit, which is covenant. And it speaks of the circumcision of a Jewish baby boy on the eighth day. It's a time of special celebration, welcoming new life into the world, the baby officially named, etc. So the horror of this, again, is deeply felt. And as I wrote in my first article, I wrote a second one today, anti-Semitism is never far from the surface. I wrote a little over a week ago about the anti-Semitism of Louis Farrakhan, referring to Jews as termites. Yeah, what do you do with termites? You exterminate them. No different than calling them parasites, like they were called in the days of the Nazis, that they must be exterminated. All they do is drain the host. They bleed the host, the host country, just like parasites draining a body. They're bloodsuckers. They're destructive. They do no good. Get rid of them. That's what Farrakhan was essentially saying. excuse me, he's not anti-Semite. He's anti-termite. Sick, ugly comments, and remarkably, they were allowed to remain up on Twitter, where he had posted them as a summary of a sermon that he preached. Yeah. So this type of garbage, this type of venom, this type of evil is never far from the surface. And therefore, when it raises its ugly head in this way, it is more disturbing than simply just another mass murder, as horrific as that is, a horrific church shooting, a horrific school shooting, innocent victims, children, innocent victims in a house of worship. I mean, these things are just utterly revolting and evil. It just ties in with a lot of other memories as well for the Jewish community. Let's go back through our history a little bit. And I want to talk to you over the course of this broadcast about the politicization of this event, whether I pronounce the word right or not, you know what I'm talking about. Everyone trying to politicize this for a particular goal, particular gain, particular purpose. I want to talk with you about that today, as well as some larger reflections on the church standing with Israel and the Jewish people. Let's go back in history, though. Let's go back to the beginning of our nation, when there was a question about the Jewish people and would they be welcomed here? How would they be treated? Jews living here in the colonies, and then with the founding of the United States. So the Jewish community of the Touro Synagogue in Newport, Rhode Island, wrote to the president, and he wrote back August 18th, 1790. This is from George Washington. "Gentlemen, while I receive with much satisfaction your address, replete with expressions of affection and esteem, I rejoice in the opportunity of assuring you that I shall always retain a grateful remembrance of the cordial welcome I experienced in my visit to Newport from all classes of citizens. The reflection on the days of difficulty and danger which are past is rendered the more sweet from a consciousness that they are succeeded by days of uncommon prosperity and security. If we have wisdom to make the best use of the advantages with which we are now favored, we cannot fail, under the just administration of a good government, to become a great and a happy people. The citizens of the United States of America have a right to applaud themselves for having given to mankind examples of an enlarged and liberal policy, a policy worthy of imitation. All possess alike liberty of conscience and immunities of citizenship. It is now no more that toleration is spoken of as if it were by the indulgence of one class of people that another enjoyed the exercise of their inherent natural rights. For happily, the government of the United States, which gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance, requires only that they who live under its protection should demean themselves as good citizens in giving it on all occasions their effectual support." Let me just pause for a moment in Washington's letter. I've got one more paragraph to go to remind you that communication in English was a bit more lofty in the late 1700s than it is today. Our discourse has degenerated. Our use of words and vocabulary and grammar is degenerated, as you see by this letter from the president. He then concludes with this: "It would be inconsistent with the frankness of my character not to avow that I am pleased with your favorable opinion of my administration and fervent wishes for my felicity. May the children of the stock of Abraham who dwell in this land continue to merit and enjoy the goodwill of the other inhabitants, while everyone shall sit in safety under his own vine and fig tree, and there shall be none to make him afraid. May the Father of all mercies scatter light and not darkness in our paths, and make us all in our several vocations useful here, and in his own due time and way everlastingly happy. George Washington." A very, very important letter in our history. And let me just pull out again two key lines. He says, "For happily the government of the United States, which gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance, requires only that they who live under its protection should demean themselves," meaning conduct themselves as good citizens. And then, "May the children of the stock of Abraham who dwell in this land continue to merit and enjoy the goodwill of the other inhabitants." So these sentiments from the president were very comforting to Jewish people. And as many Jewish Americans have commented since the massacre, that as far as a Gentile country in which a large number of Jews live, that America has been the friendliest towards the Jewish people of any in history. You say, "Mike, does that mean that that's a reason that America has been blessed?" In my view, yes. In my view, yes. And in my view, if we voted against the forming of the State of Israel, the recognition of the State of Israel in 47, 48, that our nation would look different than it does today. You say, "Well, how blessed can we be when there's so much evil in the country?" Let's turn it around and say, how much mercy has God had on us in the midst of such evil? And does he have mercy on us? Is one reason for his mercy that we have treated the Jewish people, and I'm a Jewish follower of Jesus myself, so I say Jewish people, that includes me, that we have been treated with kindness. Yeah, that makes a big, big difference. I wrote on Saturday after the massacre, giving a context, giving background to this, and urging people not to make this into a political football to kick around, that as a Jewish believer in Jesus, many folks in America that follow our ministry know me primarily as a Christian. In other words, they know me as an evangelical Christian. Not everyone knows that I'm Jewish all right? Whereas, for example, Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, everybody knows he's Jewish. If you know him, you know he's Jewish. Or Ben Shapiro, you know, if you know him, you know he's Jewish. Same with Dennis Prager, Michael Medved. I'm talking about major media figures, people well known in our society today, and they're all known as Jews. So I'm not necessarily as conspicuously Jewish as many of they are, that many of them are, because I'm a follower of Jesus. And yet, this is the trash I see day after day after day. Here, what I'm about to share with you, as ugly as it is part of a steady stream that I see on a daily basis, be it on our YouTube feed or Twitter feed or Facebook feed. So yeah, there are potentially millions of people in contact with us, but it's a steady stream. It's ugly. It's despicable. So this is just what I see, and this is the tiniest, 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 tiniest fraction of it. So here are some quotes. I hate Israel equals devil. And you're going to hear the words. They're ugly, okay? Hitler was a good guy. Jews are parasites who destroy host countries who are foolish enough to allow them entry. Educate yourself about the parasitic Jew. The Jews murdered Jesus. That's why we have murder now. Israel is a terrorist polity. The decimation of and annihilation of Israel is coming soon, inshallah, meaning Allah willing. Israel equals ISIS equals terrorism. That's it. F you, Jewish blanks, you need one more Hitler. Jews are true violent people all throughout history. This guy, speaking of me, is on Adolf Netanyahu's payroll. So Netanyahu is Hitler. Islam and Christianity can get along if it weren't for the God-blank Jews. How about this one? Anyways, you white pigs, you white pig blank, you white pig blank are extinct right now. You white pig blank are in the pit of hell for eternity. We will roast and eat your white yummy cooked meat. Prefer it well done. Can you all please go travel to blanking hell, sacrifice and eat your white baby fetuses, you abortion baby sacrificing blank, all right, you serious blanking pieces of blank, you call yourself God's chosen people, you Satan worshiping blanks. Yep, that is the type of sentiment that is out there, and some of it, friends, is out there in the name of Christianity. I read this quote, was it on Friday or Thursday of last week, that a guy, a professing Christian, at the end of a long rant, this is what he posted on my YouTube channel. Adolf Hitler was the greatest Christian in 2,000 years, since St. Paul. Sadly, he had no gas chambers for demon seed Edomite Canaanite communist Jews. The Holocaust is a total lie by demons in shoe leather that we call Jews today. This is sick. This is evil. This is demented. But friends, this is out there. We have a responsibility to confront it, rebuke it, and expose it. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown coming your way live from West Lafayette, Indiana. I'm here for a couple of days speaking at a leaders' conference for the Assemblies of God statewide leadership conference. So pray with me that leaders will be refreshed and that they will be equipped. 866-348-7884. Let me ask you, my dear listening audience, how often do you run into anti-Semitism? How often do you run into it in the church? How often do you run into it in the workplace? How often do you personally run into it on social media? Is this something that mainly Jewish people hear and get and experience, or is it something where if someone's relaxed around you or they think that you might share their sentiments, they're going to open up with their trash? How often do you run into this? 866-348-7884. Okay, no matter what we do to urge people not to politicize a tragedy like the synagogue shooting, you know what's going to happen. It's obviously going to happen, and it's going to happen on every side. So you have some folks who are just radically anti-gun, and because of that, any tragedy like this is immediately going to be something that they stand up on and address. You're going to have others that are, they're good citizens in America, they appreciate our Second Amendment, but they think, you know, it's just too many people have access to all kinds of weapons, and We got to be more careful with what weapons people can get. Okay, I let's have a always fair debate on gun control and et cetera. I'm happy to do that. I saw someone posted a question saying, did you hear about the mass shooting in Alabama over the weekend? Oh, no, you didn't, because a guy went into a McDonald's shooting and a father who's licensed to carry, a father was walking out of the restaurant with his two boys, saw what was going on, turned around and engaged in a gun battle with the guy. The guy later died of his injuries, the shooter, and the father was wounded. One of his sons was wounded. I think they'll be fine. But someone's saying, hey, the reason you didn't hear about a mass shooting in the McDonald's is because someone else had a gun and shot the person. And President Trump made the comment that, look, it's a shame they didn't have armed guards. Synagogues, churches need to have armed guards. Now, there are people who are going to react different ways to those comments. People are going to react to the gun control comments. People are going to react to the armed guard comments. But, okay, those are fair discussions to have. I have no problem with people saying, look, I'm not trying to politicize the event, but can we have a conversation moving forward for the safety of our citizens, for the safety of Americans? Okay, fine. We have the conversation. There are others, though, that have an axe to grind. There are others that have a point to make, and they're going to make that point, and they are going to blast the president or blast whoever they think should be blasted. So here's the narrative that puts the blame at the feet of Donald Trump. That the shooter, the murderer, the alleged murderer, was a white nationalist, radical right guy, anti-immigrant, and even though he doesn't like Trump, and even though he thinks Trump is surrounded by Jews, that Trump's pro-nationalist sympathies have stirred the pot, and that his anti-immigrant speech has stirred the pot, and that's what pushes this guy over to do what he does. Now, in reality, we do know that there are a lot of sick people out there, a lot of wicked people out there, and all kinds of people doing all kinds of atrocious, horrific things, some of them very unstable, some of them just downright wicked and evil, and they don't need much provocation. So we've had certain anti-Semitic acts on different levels through numerous administrations. And as I note in an article today, a conservative Jewish journalist Joel Pollack, himself an Orthodox Jew, talking about what he witnessed in Skokie, Illinois, growing up there, and then over the years, this was famous for some terrible anti-Semitic acts. He said, the fight against the Nazi march, so these neo-Nazis marching through Skokie, a community with former Holocaust survivors, the fight against the Nazi march took place when Jimmy Carter was president. The statue that was put up in honor of victims was defaced under Ronald Reagan. The shooting, there was a shooting he relates to, took place under Bill Clinton. The vandalism happened under Barack Obama. Anti-Semitism knows no party. In other words, Jew hatred does not need a specific excuse or a specific administration to lash out and do what it does. We might as well blame Bernie Sanders. We might as well blame the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center. We may as well blame the entire Democratic Party or the left-wing media for the shooting of Steve Scalise and others, the attempted murder of these Republicans by someone who is a very, very strong Democrat, Bernie Sanders supporter, believed in the SPLC and their message, etc., and the bigotry that they spread. So we've got to be really, really careful before we start ascribing blame. But let's just think a couple of things through, all right? Let's think a couple of things through. My friend Rabbi Shmuley Boteach has written about this and has noted all of the things that President Trump has done on behalf of the Jewish people. So if you're going to blame Donald Trump for what happened or somehow say he stoked anti-Semitism, hang on. His son-in-law Jared is Jewish. His daughter Ivanka converted to Judaism. That means his grandchildren are Jewish, all right? And there are going to be few people on the planet, if any, closer to Donald Trump than his daughter, son-in-law, and grandchildren. Who's going to be closer than that? His wife Melania, and you know his other kids. I mean, they're all in there, right? So that's his immediate circle. That's one thing. He moved the embassy to Jerusalem. That's major. That's major. Not only so, he also got out of the horrific Iran deal, something that Israel hated, and that was a bad deal, and that helped Iran potentially get nuclear weapons in the future from everything I understand, and ultimately put billions of dollars in the money that they put back into terrorism, all right? He stopped funding the Palestinian Authority because of their practice, specific funding. He stopped funding them because of their practice of paying the families of terrorists. So if your son blows himself up in a suicide bomb and five Israeli children are killed, then your family is going to get a pension from the Palestinian Authority. And Donald Trump called the Palestinian Authority out on this, and they said, we're going to keep doing what we're doing. So, and terrorists that are in prison in Israel, they get funding, okay? So all that to say that President Trump has shown himself to be a strong friend of the Jewish people. And to in any way make some kind of claim that he is therefore responsible for this or stoking Jew hatred or anything like that is beyond bizarre. Check out this comment. Are you ready? This is from a writer on for GQ, Julie Ioffe. It's Ioffe, her last name. She said this. She said, and a word to my fellow American Jews. So she writes this as a Jewish woman herself. This president makes this possible here, where you live. I hope the embassy move over there where you don't live was worth it. So she is making the utterly outrageous and bizarre claim that because the president moved the embassy to Jerusalem, and she's upset about this as a Jewish woman, all right? That because the president moved the embassy to Jerusalem, therefore that inflamed this guy to go into a synagogue and start shooting Jews. What a crazy, crazy comment. And she makes this statement, pogroms didn't happen without the person at the top, the Tsar, the president condoning it either tacitly or explicitly. So the pogroms were these uprisings, violent uprisings against Jewish people, say in Russia, Eastern Europe, late 1800s, early 1900s, where a crowd would just go through a Jewish community and destroy it, killing Jewish people, destroying property, forcing them to flee. If you watch Fiddler on the Roof, you'll see that this takes place against the background of the pogroms. And she says, yeah, see, only these things, compared to the pogroms, only happen, like the synagogue massacre, either with the explicit or tacit condoning of it by the head guy, the Tsar or the president. Another sicko comment. It's crazy. The pogroms happened. Yeah, the government basically would look the other way or even encourage these types of activities, whereas Donald Trump has branded this anti-Semitic pure evil, and we have to do everything we can to combat this. And it's as if somehow he looked the other way, and then because of him, this happens in the synagogue. So these kind of crazy comments are utterly irresponsible. And yeah, President Trump is back on the war path again today and speaking against the media and the damage it does and how it's inciting violence and it's the enemy of the people and it's fake news and they need to get back to reporting factually. I wish he wouldn't do that today. I wish he would back off and set a tone to say, all right, listen, let's stop bashing each other. We know sentiments are high, but right now we need to come together. And we need to do what we can to address some of these issues of violence and things like that. So I don't like him saying these things either and wish he wouldn't. But to blame him for the attack, to say that he's somehow responsible, is irresponsible and wrong and factually incorrect. Oh, by the way, it gets worse. You've got to hear what a progressive Jewish group has said to the president, and then a British politician who actually blames who for this attack? Who does she blame for the attack on the Jewish people in a synagogue in Pittsburgh? She blames the Jewish people. She blames Israel. I kid you not. So we'll talk about that when we come back, and we'll talk about why it's so important for the church to stand with the Jewish people. 866-348-7884 if you want to weigh in with your comments or if you have a question for me. Happy to take your questions as well. Very sensitive, difficult, painful issues. May God be gracious to the survivors of these families who you can imagine the trauma they're in right now. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for being part of today's broadcast. We are, again, audio only for those that normally watch on YouTube or Facebook. You can watch. You just won't see a moving picture, but you'll hear my voice just the same. Hopefully, we can share some things that will be of help to you in the aftermath of the tragic shedding of Jewish blood in the synagogue in Pittsburgh this past Saturday. If you have a comment or question, 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. Let me step back and say something to you as a Caucasian Jewish American. Many of my Black American friends, African American friends, have sensitized me to things that I would not have been sensitive to before. I would have had some level of head knowledge about them, but not the full weight of it in terms of from their perspective, what they've lived with, what they've experienced. And I'm always doing my best to learn from others. I have deep convictions that there are hills on which I'll die in terms of truths that I hold to with all of my heart and soul. And there are other things where I keep being shaped and molded as I seek to grow as a human being and grow as a follower of Jesus and be more understanding and more compassionate and have even more integrity as I learn the truth more deeply. So again, there are things I haven't moved on in 46 plus years, and by God's grace, I don't plan on moving an inch from until the day I see him face to face, at which point he will confirm to me that I did well to stand on those things. But in other areas, I want to keep growing. I want to keep learning. I hope that's the case with all of us. So, yes, I've understood that when there are certain events that take place in America where an innocent Black person is killed by a white person, that it stirs up all kinds of memories. It's not just that event itself, but if it happens and it seems that the society looks the other way or the courts look the other way, if that is the appearance, it stirs up a lot of memories because of the past, the very recent past in some cases, you know, a generation back and generations before that. So I understand that it's not just that event which will trouble my Black American friends, but that event in the context of our history. Makes sense, right? Well, in the same way, when there is Jewish blood shed like this, it's not just the tragic event itself that gets our attention as Jewish people. It's this event in the context of the history of anti-Semitism. It's this event in the history, in the context of the history of violence against Jews. So when you have a shooter going into a synagogue shouting, "All Jews must die," that's been the mantra for centuries. That's been what's shouted out for millennia. Jews are guilty, Jews must die, Jews are evil. That's what's repeated, that's what's believed. You've got to get rid of them. Now, look, I can't relate to the madness, the insanity, the evil of a mentality like that. But it's been here, and it continues to be here. And you know for sure that there are other Americans, yes, a tiny minority, but other Americans who are looking at this crazy, evil man as a hero. Absolutely. And just like there are other Americans who are looking at the pipe bomber who attempted to bomb all these Democrat-friendly sites and people and kill people, if he had his way, would have done that. That there are people secretly cheering him on. I understand there is that level of evil in the human race. But it gets even uglier and crazier when it comes to anti-Semitism because of the lies, the constant lies about the Jews. So I've got a brand new article up that I wrote this morning, Blaming Jews for the Synagogue Slaughter. And yes, it's anti-Semitic. So, for example, The mindset is this, all right? When Jews are killed, it's the fault of the Jews, since the Jews are always guilty. So in one generation, they're guilty of deicide. They're a nation of Christ killers. One generation, they're parasites, bleeding their host country dry. In another generation, they're trying to take over the world. In another generation, they're guilty of the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians. But in every generation, they're guilty. And when they're killed, it's ultimately their fault. So that's the heartbeat of anti-Semitism. So check out this comment. This is on Saturday. This is shortly after news of the massacre has spread. A Baroness Jenny Tong, who is a British House of Lords lawmaker with apparently a history of making anti-Semitic statements, she says this. Are you ready? Absolutely appalling and a criminal act. But does it ever occur to Bibi, meaning Prime Minister Netanyahu, does it ever occur to Bibi and the present Israeli government that its actions against Palestinians may be reigniting anti-Semitism? In other words, Jews died because Jews are guilty. Jews were slaughtered in the synagogue because Israel is taking cruel actions against the Palestinians, and that's reigniting anti-Semitism. Here's the deal. Anti-Semitism doesn't need anything to reignite it. Anti-Semitism does not need an excuse. Anti-Semitism does not need a rationale. Anti-Semitism does not need a provocation because it's based on lies and it's based on false stereotypes and it's based on destructive exaggerations. So if Jews in America are highly successful, that's further proof that Jews are trying to take over the world. If you have Jewish leaders in the banking industry, that's proof that Jews control the money in the world. If you have prominent Jews in Hollywood, that's proof that Jews are trying to undermine the morals of America. And on it goes. You say, but there's a lot of truth to that. Oh, there's truth to the fact that you have successful Jews in America and Jews in the banking industry and Jews in Hollywood, and they have a disproportionate influence compared to their numbers. Let's just understand. Let's understand that through history, when Jews were the least in their societies, when they were the persecuted minority, when they had to flee from country to country, when they had very little income and very few jobs they could work, they were just as hated. They were more hated. So let's expose anti-Semitism for what it is. Now, check this out. Are you ready? And this is, well, when it comes to Jewish blood being shed, there's controversy on every side. There is a letter that's being widely quoted, spread, referenced by the secular media. And it's basically giving the impression that the Jewish community of Pittsburgh, represented by its leaders, tells President Trump, we don't want you in our city. You're not welcome here. You're the cause of this violence. You're the cause of this. So I'd never heard of the group before. It's called Bend the Ark. And here's what they wrote. This is from Jewish leaders in Pittsburgh. That's the way it's being promoted. Or from the Jewish leaders in Pittsburgh. And here's what they wrote. And I'm just looking down at the link to bendtheark.us. And let's just see here. It's signed by the Bend the Ark Pittsburgh Steering Committee. Initially, it had a list of a few names at the end of the article, and I'm just looking here to see, okay, they're not listing the names, but initially it was just a handful of names, okay? Six names, seven names, if you know, a handful plus, all right? Now it just has been the ARC Steering Committee. So here's what they wrote. I'm going to tell you who they are in a minute. President Trump, yesterday, a gunman slaughtered 11 Americans during Shabbat morning services. We mourn with the victims' families and pray for the wounded. Here in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, we express gratitude for the first responders and for the outpouring of support from our neighbors near and far. We are committed to healing as a community while we recommit ourselves to repairing our nation. For the past 3 years, your words and your policies have emboldened a growing white nationalist movement. You yourself call the murderer evil, but yesterday's violence is the direct culmination of your influence. That's what they're saying. President Trump, you are not welcome in Pittsburgh until you fully denounce white nationalism. And I'm reading excerpts now. President Trump, you are not welcome in Pittsburgh until you stop targeting and endangering all minorities. President Trump, you are not welcome in Pittsburgh until you cease your assault on immigrants and refugees. President Trump, you are not welcome in Pittsburgh until you commit yourself to compassionate democratic policies that recognize the dignity of all of us. Now, Ben Shapiro, who is certainly not a great fan and supporter of President Trump, but recognizes good when he does it, he has an article on Daily Wire stating this. Over the weekend, the press began a narrative drumbeat suggesting that President Trump was somehow responsible for the Tree of Life synagogue shooting in Pittsburgh on Saturday, the deadliest anti-Semitic shooting in American history. On Monday, key members of the press amplified that message by quoting supposed Pittsburgh Jewish leaders saying the same thing. Here, for example, was Maggie Haberman of the New York Times. Letter to President Trump from Pittsburgh Jewish leaders. Ben the Ark, the group quoted here, wrote a letter stating, and I just read some of that to you. So Ben asked, Ben Shapiro, himself an Orthodox Jew, so is Ben the Ark really a group of Jewish leaders? Only in name, he says. The group is merely a leftist political action group with a Jewish label. Their stated mission is, quote, rising up in solidarity with everyone threatened by the Trump agenda to fight for the soul of our nation. Their missions include the election of, quote, progressive champions and the implementation of progressive legislation and policies like criminal justice reform and economic equity. Ben asks, who runs behind the ARC? Alexander Soros, George Soros' son. When he started the PAC, Politico, so the Political Action Committee, Politico noted, Soros, who formed his own foundation in 2012 to promote social justice and human rights, has given $1.2 million to Democratic candidates and groups in the last three elections. It should be noted here that criticism of the political viewpoint of major Democratic donors is not anti-Semitism, it is normal politics. The director of Ben the Ark was Hadash Suskin, formerly a staffer at the anti-Semitic front group J Street, which spends its days attempting to undermine the safety and security of the state of Israel. None of the headlines mention what Ben the Ark actually is, a far-left political action group with little relationship to Judaism itself. Instead, the media just ran with the headline. Washington Post, he's not welcome here. Thousands support Pittsburgh Jewish leaders calling on Trump to denounce white nationalism. The Hill, progressive Jewish leaders tell Trump he's not welcome in Pittsburgh until he denounces white nationalism. Newsweek, Jewish group says Donald Trump not welcome in Pittsburgh until he is ready to fully denounce white nationalism. Here's the real headline, Ben writes. Rabbi Jeffrey Myers of the Tree of Life Synagogue told CNN this morning, the president of the United States is always welcome. I'm a citizen. He's my president. He's certainly welcome. And Ben notes that's not going to get the same kind of media coverage. It's no wonder why. So for those who are saying, yeah, these progressive Jews, obviously they speak for the Jewish community of Pittsburgh and America. They speak for a fringe left-wing group themselves. But if they speak for other American Jews, they speak for left-wing American Jews. They certainly do not speak for all American Jews. In any case, now is not the time to be pointing fingers at the president. Now is not the time to be making this into a political football. I've got one more segment to go, a lot more to share. Stay with us.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My friend, Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, writes on the Hill, Trump is not to blame for the Pittsburgh massacre. Now, the other day I had mentioned when you have two Jews in a room, you have three opinions. And a caller called in, regular listener, not himself a follower of Jesus, a part-time professor. And he mentioned that this quote, this idea goes back many, many hundreds of years in Jewish tradition. So there are all types of subplots that now come out of this. So the forward.com, this is a left-leaning Jewish publication. The oldest, I believe, in America was originally Yiddish only, then Yiddish English as well. And it reported yesterday that the chief rabbi, the Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Israel, referenced the shooting as a terrible tragedy, but he did not reference it taking place in a synagogue. He said, this is Rabbi David Lau, any murder of any Jew in any part of the world for being Jewish is unforgivable, and referred to it taking place in, quote, a place with a profound Jewish flavor. You say, well, why didn't he say it took place in the synagogue? Because as an Orthodox Israeli rabbi, he does not recognize conservative Judaism or Reform Judaism, the more liberal forms of Judaism, as actually being Judaism. They say that the Jewish people are Jews and the rabbis are Jews, but that it is not truly Judaism, and therefore this should not be recognized as a synagogue. So now you've got Jewish controversy over this and people responding in anger. Yitzhar Hess, who's executive director of the conservative movement in Israel, asked rhetorically, really, chief rabbi of Israel, a place with a profound Jewish flavor, perhaps a synagogue? Tomer Persico, prominent Israeli scholar of religion, tweeted in response, chief rabbi Lau refuses to say it was a synagogue, and that's why Jews were murdered when praying. And interestingly, but in harmony with the perspective, the ultra-Orthodox Jewish newspapers in Israel all reported on the attack, but likewise refused to refer to Tree of Life as a synagogue, preferring instead to call it a Jewish center. So again, just some of the ongoing controversy within the Jewish world. But I wanted to share what Rabbi Shmuley said and then speak to each of you as followers of Jesus, all right? Rabbi Shmuley noted that President Trump has unequivocally condemned the slaughter as an anti-Semitic act of pure evil. He notes the president declared the widespread persecution of Jews to be one of the ugliest and darkest features of human history, a moment he vowed to fight. Quote, it will take all of us working together to extract the poison of anti-Semitism from our world. And he asked Americans to unite to conquer hate. So Rabbi Shmuley notes that despite these facts and despite the shooter speaking against Trump because he was surrounded by Jews, Rabbi Shmuley notes that many people have come close to blaming Trump for the shooting, and others have outright done it. He even mentions former Vice President Joe Biden, who said in a statement that words matter and silence is complicity. So what is that to make? Rabbi Shmuley says, as a Jew, I'm extremely grateful to President Trump for the unparalleled support he has shown Israel in the Oval Office. That did not stop me from publicly and strongly criticizing the president for his failure to sufficiently condemn the white supremacists in Charlottesville. But if we are to criticize serious failure, we must then similarly laud significant success. And he lists all of the varied things that Donald Trump has done for Israel. Rabbi Shmuley says this, just think if Robert Bowers had been a Palestinian and his 11 victims had lived in Israel, he and his family would have been collecting from their terror pension for the rest of their lives. Ultimately, though, he writes, what makes the accusations of anti-Semitism against Trump especially unfair is the fact that he is the first president of the United States to have Jewish children and grandchildren. Even Trump's worst enemies would admit that he loves and deeply cherishes his daughter Ivanka, who went through the strictest processes of conversion to become an Orthodox Jew. Through his daughter Trump, now has three Jewish grandchildren who attend Jewish schools. His son-in-law Jared Kushner and Ivanka regularly attend synagogue themselves. For Trump, the looming threats facing Jewish community centers have become, if anything, entirely personal. Rabbi Shmuley is right on that. What about Trump's statements that seem to fuel the fires of white nationalism or of white supremacy or of a xenophobic hyper-nationalism? I do believe that he needs to recognize that these groups look to him in certain ways because they are not just nationalists, but they are hyper-nationalists. So when he says America first, make America great again, they say amen to it because they're hearing it one way. Whenever possible, he should make clear that he stands against the so-called alt-right, that he renounces white supremacy. You can't say it too much, and his main base is not going to be offended by it. It's going to be the fringe right that's offended by it. Let them be offended. So in that respect, yeah, he could do a better job of not giving more fuel to the fire of his critics. We're not going to revisit the whole Charlottesville thing. You can read what I've written about that in my book, Donald Trump is Not My Savior, which, by the way, to repeat again, unless Donald Trump is your savior, it's a message you'll resonate with and a message I think you'll find really important. And I'm thrilled to see we've just got the first five reviews or so on Amazon, but everyone 5-star and people really, really enjoying the book. As much as I was hoping it would impact readers, it's impacting them. So if you don't have it yet, get it. And you'll see that even in my most fervent anti-Trump days during the primaries, before it was him versus Hillary Clinton, before I voted for him, I said he's not an anti-Semite. I didn't buy that. I didn't believe it. Even in my most fervent anti-Trump days, and that's in the book too. That's all in the book, Donald Trump is Not My Savior. But I do believe that President Trump could make himself more clear at certain times and not give any place to the viewpoint of these radical fringe right people. And if he needs their votes to get elected and needs to play to that base, then he shouldn't be elected. Let him speak the truth. Let a majority of Americans get behind him and the politicians, political leaders who share his larger views for the betterment of the nation. And if the only way he can get elected is by inspiring anti-immigrant hatred, I'm talking about all immigrants. If the only way he can get elected is by inspiring hatred of all Muslims, if the only way he can get elected is by cultivating a white nationalist mindset, then he has no business being our president, and there are not enough Americans to vote for him. I don't believe that's the case, though. And I believe that if he takes certain stands, he'd get some people who are kind of on the fence to come out and support him while his base would remain strong. But let me say this to all of you who are followers of Jesus. Anti-Semitism has existed in church history as well. Famous Jew haters have been professing Christians. And in the traditional Jewish mind, there's a straight line from Jesus and the New Testament to the Holocaust. That's how they view church history. I remember having a friendly debate with a rabbi many, many years ago. I'm just trying to think when this was, maybe late 80s, early 90s. And we were having a friendly debate in a Jewish educational class he was teaching, and we were talking about Jesus, we were talking about Christianity, and he made the statement, "I could get into a boat and sail off in the ocean of Jewish blood shed in Jesus' name." That is how he, as an educated man, viewed church history. You say, but that's not the case. That's not representative. And the Holocaust was anti-Christian. And Jew haters have been false professors of Christianity. And the real church loves Jewish people. Well, in many cases, that's true. I was at a church yesterday, Pastor John Kilpatrick's Church of His Presence in Daphne, Alabama, yesterday. And he reminded his congregation, has been there several years, that there has not been a Sunday since they have gathered, and he's been there, that they haven't prayed for Israel. And he took a substantial part of the service to speak blessing and to have everyone pray for the survivors of the families and for the Jewish community in Pittsburgh. And I have seen that around the world. I could take you to country after country with me around the world where you'll meet Christians who've had nothing but love for the Jewish people and nothing but love for Israel. And when they read about and hear about anti-Semitism in church history, they're shocked, they're mortified, they can't believe it. They're beyond shocked that such things have existed. And yet, beginning in the second century, you have Christian texts that begin to dehumanize Jews. And then the third and fourth century demonize Jews. And even begin to teach that God hates the Jews in the fourth and fifth centuries. And then these things then pave the way for later anti-Jewish violence in the name of Jesus. So it's imperative for Christians today to make clear that that is not part of our faith, that that is an aberration, that a true lover of Jesus will be a lover of the Jewish people. It doesn't mean that you appreciate everything Israel does. It doesn't mean that you paint the Jewish people as being perfect. And by all means, it doesn't mean that you don't share the gospel with the Jewish people. After all, the gospel is for the Jew first and also for the Gentile. So by all means, we preach, we share the gospel. As a Jew, I'm urging you to share the good news of Jesus with my fellow Jews. He's the Savior of Jew and Gentile alike because he's the Messiah of Israel. Absolutely. All that being said, to the extent that you can let your Jewish friends know, as a follower of Jesus, you have a special love for the Jewish people. As a follower of Jesus, you recognize God's hand on the Jewish people and how he's kept us through history. In the midst of persecution and even divine judgment, he's kept us through history. He's brought us back to the land in his mercy. And you as a Christian have a sense of indebtedness and connection to the Jewish people. Now's a great time to let your Jewish friends know that. All right, friends, back with you tomorrow right here on the Line of Fire.